This is Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi. Sponsored by Hartford Healthcare, Ratchford Eye Center, St. Francis Hospital, Covaris, and Yukon Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Healthy Rounds provides general information regarding medical conditions and diseases. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You're encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own medical care. And now, Dr. Anthony Alessi on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Healthy Rounds, the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information, and we answer all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be with you on this Saturday morning. And it's I'm looking forward to today's show because we welcome back Dr. Michael Joyce. Dr. Joyce was one of the original sponsors of our program through the Connecticut Joint Replacement Institute 15 years ago. And he was instrumental in helping us get this off the ground and has periodically appeared on our program. But today he's going to come on in his new role. In addition to being an active orthopedic sports surgeon, he is president and CEO of the Lighthouse Surgery Center. And that is the surgery center affiliated with St. Francis Hospital. And everyone, by all accounts, this is an outstanding facility. And we're going to talk about how it got to be among the best in the United States and exists right here in Hartford. So we're going to be chatting with Dr. Joyce in the second half of our program. It would not be a turn your clocks back Saturday unless I put my 2 cents in to once again advocate to end this insanity. Our bodies, our cells, work on a diurnal clock. Whether we change our clock or not, where we live, our cells are working on that physiologically. The idea that by changing our clock, we're doing something healthy is preposterous. And specifically, daylight saving time makes no sense. And the fact that people are rebelling against going to standard time is the insanity. Why? This isn't a new concept. We have good data to show that more people will have strokes and heart attacks, okay, when we start to change our clocks. The problem with daylight is we now have issues with car accidents, right, early in the morning. So we need to get more sunlight early in the morning. It also helps us wake up, okay? So that's why we need to get back on standard time as soon as possible and keep it on standard time. Just think, if we stayed on daylight saving time, it is so dark in the morning, children are standing at bus stops. We see accidents. It's hard to see people who have to walk to work. Now, I know the argument. The argument is an economic one. That, well, golf courses will make more money. More money will be made by outdoor restaurants. Money is not the issue. Health is the issue. And overall, every sleep society, every sleep expert, every medical doctor who deals with sleep will tell you that the safest thing for us to do as a country is get on standard time and just leave it there. But once again, we're fooling with these clocks, making errors, and trying to deal with the changes. And farmers are the biggest advocates to get onto standard time, right? Because they're dealing with cattle, okay? So it upsets your pets. It upsets everybody. So whenever possible, if you could speak to your elected officials, even if we just do it here in Connecticut, okay, let's start doing the right thing. And, you know, it doesn't make a difference to our golf courses, right? Because they're closed anyhow once the weather changes. So it's not like we have this year-round issue. But, you know, the folks in Florida, they want to push for that so they could make more money. But again, it's not a money issue. It's a health issue. So you've gotten my two cents in. You know, last year we had Dr. Karen Johnson on, and she eloquently explained this all as to why we need to do this. This day in medicine, November 2nd, 1322. This is an interesting one because it goes way back. And there was a guilty verdict against Jacoba Felice. Now, she was a woman, and she was charged by the Masters in Medicine at Paris of practicing medicine and surgery, of inspecting urine, feeling pulses, and touching limbs. In her defense, though, she argued that she entered into no contracts. Patients paid what they wished when they got well. She treated mostly women and patients on whom the established physicians had already given up. She visited her patients frequently and just absolutely chatted with them and created this bond of faith. She was threatened with a fine and excommunication, of all things. But the reason I bring this one up is because the practice of medicine is more than just prescribing medications, doing surgery. It's about establishing a bond with a patient. And we've gotten away from that. And when we get away from it, we start losing what the art of medicine is. Now, we've gotten away from it for several reasons. One is that there's not enough time. And there are a lot of patients to be seen. So, again, we speak to the issue of what are we going to do in terms of designing a better healthcare system? And this all interrelates with some of the issues that are faced regarding access to care. A recent book published called The Anatomy of Deception. And in the book, The Anatomy of Deception, the author discusses a lot about conspiracy theories, distrust, and distrust basically in health care system of America. Now, a lot of times what we're saying is people who go out to use alternative treatments, they must be crazy, they're not smart, but whatever. But maybe we should go back in, and this is what this book does, is it goes back and looks at why are these people seeking alternative medicine? And the two biggest reasons are access to care. You see these alternative medicines thrive in places where there is no access to standards of health care and standards of science. The other thing that gets people to go to alternative medicine is medical debt. They hear about this all the time, right? Medical debt, people losing their homes and going into tremendous amounts of debt over medication, over seeking health care if they need surgery. So until we address those issues, right, alternatives to standard medicine are going to thrive. One of the stories brought up in the book is about a woman who lived in Montana, in a rural area of Montana, and because of a lack of access to health care, she went with alternative medicines. She subsequently moved to Norway, and in Norway, they have universal care. So she had access to health care and found that she enjoyed that from the standpoint that she had access to a physician, she was taking the right medications for her illnesses, and she did well. Unfortunately, due to circumstances, she had to move back to Montana. When she got back to Montana, once again, she resumed working with alternative medications and alternative because she didn't have access. So you don't have to be a Phi Beta Kappa here to figure out that if we're going to fix the system, if we're going to reach people, it's not that they hate science, that they don't want to participate. We've just not given them the invitation. And as mentioned in the story of Jacoba Felice, a lot of this has to do with access. You know, a lot of times, like when I'm in Haiti, many people, the only access they have, and this is an extreme situation, but the only access they have are the various village healers. And really, the village healers are really only providing an ear. They sit there and listen to somebody, listen to their problem, and try to get them to believe in whatever they have available, whether it be a prayer, whether it be a leaf, a smoke, whatever it is, they get people to be encouraged. So we need to improve access overall. And one of those situations just came up this week. The health department, this is an interesting one, because there's a health department in Idaho. The regional public health department in Idaho is no longer providing COVID-19 vaccines to residents in six counties after a decision by its board. Now, it's the first time in the United States that there's a restriction on giving COVID-19 vaccines. Now, we understand, people who listen to this program understand the importance of vaccination in general. We also have good proof that COVID-19 vaccines save lives, especially in older people, people who have ongoing conditions. Doesn't mean you won't get COVID, but it'll keep you from dying from COVID. So basically, in this six-county district, in some of it involves Boise, so a metropolitan area, you can no longer administer a COVID-19 vaccine. And it was interesting because the argument from the director was that the request to the board was to be able to at least offer vaccines, recognizing that we always have these discussions of the risks and benefits. It's not a blind everybody gets a shot approach. He wanted a thoughtful approach to COVID-19 vaccination. And yet they now have restricted. This is the first place. So Texas has talked about it and restricting it and restricting discussions to a COVID-19 vaccine. And the person who testified against or in favor of this ban for COVID-19 vaccine is Dr. Peter McCullough. This is a Texas cardiologist who sells a contagion emergency kit. This is where he makes his money. He sells a contagion emergency kit, including ivermectin and hydrochloroquine, both drugs that have proven not only to be not helpful, but somewhat dangerous. So again, it speaks to this anti-science approach that we have taken, right? Whether it be with changing our clocks, whether it be with vaccines, whether it be with going out and trying to get access to medicine or practices of medicine that may be dangerous to your health. The system is broken. We need to change it. And I think all our listeners understand that. And that is absolutely imperative for us moving forward as a society in this country. With that, we're going to take a short break. Then we'll be back. I want to take some time to discuss Medicare, right? Medicare, we're in the midst of the open enrollment period here from October 15th to December 7th. And it's worth reiterating. I know many of you understand it, but there are certain nuances that I didn't understand until I did some more reading about this. If you wish to reach out to me, you can get to me at info@alessimd.com. If you have questions that I can propose to our guest in the second half hour, Dr. Michael Joyce, from the Lighthouse Surgical Center. You can also get them to me in advance. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I obviously touched on a sensitive topic there, and I appreciate the emails. One of them deals with, and most deal with, the issue of freedom of choice. And I think that, we don't want the government telling us what to do with our health. We just don't. Now, I didn't want to get into the whole deal of reproductive freedom, but that's one of them. But even just getting a vaccine, you should have the freedom. I listen on this station, right? We have a lot of people who are libertarian. Okay. Again, you should have the right, if you live in Idaho, to get a COVID vaccine. You don't need a government agency, their local health district, saying you can't get one here. Those decisions need to be made between a patient and their doctor, okay, or whatever health provider they are getting, an APRN, a PA. They make a decision as to whether or not that person should get a COVID vaccine. So to issue a ban in these counties is, again, an issue of government interference in the field of health care. So I hear you loud and clear, and I think that people are going to go to the ballot box, and that's going to have to be an issue. And probably the same in Idaho. I'm sure there are people who are very angry that they don't have the right to do it, whether they want one or not. So very important topic. In the last few minutes, I want to talk a little bit about Medicare and Medicare Advantage. Two types of systems, right? You have traditional Medicare and you have Medicare Advantage plans. When we look at traditional Medicare, right, there's Part A, hospital coverage, Part B, doctor and outpatient services, Part C is a Medicare Advantage plan, and Part D are prescription drugs. So the big differences are Medicare Advantage, cheaper plan, overall fewer costs, but more restrictive. So if you're on a tight budget in retirement, you may want to consider going with an Advantage plan. If you're happy with a restricted panel of physicians, they're your physicians, they're all on that panel, it may be worth doing. So you can go with an Advantage plan. Now, you may want to lean towards a traditional plan, right? If you have any serious or complicated health issues that you'll be facing, if you divide your time among different homes in different parts of the country, you spend a lot of time visiting relatives, may want to consider something more traditional. And the primary goal, if your goal is to minimize your unexpected health bills. Also, when you're dealing with Medicare, you have a lot less hassle with dealing with insurance companies, because with Advantage plans, you have a lot of issues with prior authorizations to get things done. Now, here's where I learned something. If you're not certain about whether you want to use Medicare Advantage or traditional Medicare, okay, you should go with traditional Medicare. And the reason is because if you later change your mind, you can easily switch from traditional Medicare to a Medicare Advantage plan during this annual enrollment sign-up, which we're in now from October 15th to December 7th. If you choose Medicare Advantage, it's trickier to switch in the other direction. You will be able to enroll in traditional Medicare, but if you need to purchase a supplement, right, a supplemental plan, you may have to go through what they call medical underwriting. Basically, to get that supplemental coverage, they may not take you because of your health. Whereas they can't do that if you're going from traditional Medicare to Medicare Advantage. That's a key thing, right? So it's something you really need to think about when you're signing up initially and trying to decide whether to go with traditional Medicare or a Medicare Advantage plan. We're going to take a short break. Then we're going to be back with my guest, Dr. Michael Joyce. We're going to be talking about the Lighthouse Surgery Center here in Hartford, Connecticut, and some of the procedures being done, and really what has raised them to such a stellar position in ratings among surgery centers in the United States. If you have questions for Dr. Joyce, you can reach me at info@alessimd.com. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome my guest for this half hour, Dr. Michael Joyce. As mentioned, Dr. Michael Joyce was instrumental when we started this program 15 years ago. And he has been my friend for more than 30 years when we shared space in a small office in Willimantic, both starting out early in our careers. I venture to say that no orthopedic surgeon has operated on more UConn athletes than Dr. Joyce over these years. And really, as a testament to his expertise, when they go on to their professional careers and have injuries, they fly back here to see Dr. Joyce. And he's done so much for our community, and I wanted to get him on to really talk about this latest venture, the Lighthouse Surgery Center. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Bunny. I'm happy to be here, and thank you for that warm introduction.
Let's talk a little bit about surgical centers in general. Talk a little bit about how have they evolved. We hear about it, and there's really been this evolution and awareness now of having surgery in a surgery center. Can you explain that for our listeners?
Wow. I'd love to have the opportunity to do, because I think there is some confusion what's going on in this space. We're all familiar with going to a hospital and having an operation, but in the last couple of decades, there's been an evolution, a movement towards an outpatient or ambulatory setting, and ambulatory surgery centers have started to explode in popularity over the last 10 to 20 years. They come in three varieties. As an independent ambulatory surgery center. The first is there are some that are owned by and run by very large corporations like Surgery Center of America, and they're scattered throughout the country. There are also ambulatory surgery centers that are owned and run by hospital or hospital corporations. What I want to focus on is what we call independent ambulatory surgery centers, of which almost all of them are operated, owned, and run by surgeons, physicians, in independent surgical groups. Warren Buffett, in his annual report a couple years ago, was coming off some bruises after he partnered with some titans of industry to develop some new approaches to healthcare, and the whole thing kind of died away. But in his annual report, he said that one of the biggest advancements in healthcare that has an impact on the lives of Americans has been physician-owned and physician-run ambulatory surgery centers. And he highlighted them because of two important things. Their record of success is outstanding in terms of the outcomes and the safety, and they are a value situation where they do all of that at lower cost. And for patients to get better healthcare outcomes at a lower cost is kind of the holy grail of where we want to go with medicine, given the strains on our healthcare system. So what I'm involved with at Lighthouse Surgery Center is an ambulatory surgery center that has partnered with St. Francis, but is majority run by the surgeons themselves. And we own it and we run it. And that's the origin of our surgery center here in Hartford, Connecticut.
So when we look at these, what are the advantages for a patient? Is it cost? Is it efficiency? What are the advantages for a patient to go to an ambulatory surgical center as opposed to going to a hospital and having it done?
We're able to stay very focused on a very specific mission. Our surgery center specializes in orthopedics and spine. So we're not trying to do all the elements of healthcare. We have our attention really focused on a very specific niche in healthcare. And in orthopedics, it's really the whole gamut of things. We do everything from foot and ankle surgery, all kinds of hand surgeries. We do sports medicine, arthroscopic procedures, but we also do hip replacements, knee replacements, shoulder replacements, and we do a wide variety of spine procedures as well. And while that's a lot of breadth in all of healthcare, it's a really narrow focus. That allows us to have staff that's trained and focused and highly specialized. And it allows our anesthesia team, again, to be highly specialized, highly focused on that niche of healthcare. And by doing that, you know, we don't have to have the resources to do everything. We have all the resources you could ever hope for to be very focused on every element of that orthopedic and spine care.
So when we chatted previously, when you were, you know, working at CJRI, which I know you still do, you know, you were very data-driven in terms of what you've done. Has this been kind of a crossover from that, taking the data and what was learned at CJRI and applying it more to an ambulatory setting?
That's a great point. Our origin story really comes out of CJRI, the Joint Institute at St. Francis. We developed that now almost 20 years ago, but it was highly data-driven, and it worked to develop conforming practices amongst our surgeons by figuring out what was the safest way and the way to get the best patient outcome. And by doing that, we measured all elements of patient safety. We measured all elements of patient outcomes in terms of the quality of the surgery and how well they did following their surgeries. The evolution of joint replacement surgery just kind of fits hand in glove with the evolution of ambulatory surgery centers. And the early part of my practice, if a patient had a hip or knee replacement, they could be in the hospital for a week or longer. And in fact, in some parts of the country, in England or Australia, people are still in the hospital for a week. But as we got more data-driven, we were able to fine-tune that process, and patients were able to stay in the hospital a shorter period of time. And they went from a week down to 5 days, down to 3 days, down to just 24 hours. And as we saw that trend continue, we saw the risk associated with surgery start to decrease as well. So the risk of infection, the risk of getting a blood clot, all those risks went down and down. And other areas of orthopedics, we had gone from 1 or 2 days in the hospital to a hospital-based outpatient center where people would go home shortly. And so we kind of saw the writing on the wall that that would probably happen with spine procedures and joint replacement procedures. So while we were at CJRI, we began to develop a program where, while at the hospital, patients would be able to go home the same day if they met certain criteria. And for several years, tracked that, looked at the critical elements of success, and saw the same trend. If they went home that same day, lower rate of infection, a lower rate of complications. And that was kind of the nest that our joint program at Lighthouse Surgery Center grew out of. The ironic part of it all is that we developed the Lighthouse Surgery Center from about 2018 to 2020, and then we opened and did our first surgery on Valentine's Day 2020 to be followed by COVID 2 weeks later. And, you know, COVID kind of shook all of healthcare to the core. But as we started to come out of healthcare, the patient's desires to avoid being in a hospital, which was so associated with the treatment of COVID sick patients, instead of patients trickling into outpatient joint replacement surgery, they flooded and far exceeded our expectations. Since by the time surgery centers and hospitals started opening up in the summer of 2020, the patients far preferred to go to an independent ambulatory surgery center and avoid the whole COVID thing. And so instead of doing dozens of cases, we are doing 10, 20, 30, 50 cases a month, and the patients came over. And what we had been preparing for 4 years suddenly became a rush of patients. And ironically, at the same time, everybody is working from home. So if you're going to have a new knee replacement, there's no better time. You can go to an ambulatory surgery center and then work from home and not miss a month from work or something like that. It was kind of a perfect constellation of events that helped Lighthouse get off the ground. And now this year, you know, we're going to do close to 1,200 outpatient hip and knee replacements and close to 4,500 total surgeries at Lighthouse Surgery Center just in 2024.
Mike, are you only doing orthopedic procedures at Lighthouse, or are you doing some general, are there some general surgical procedures being done?
We're really just orthopedic and spine surgery. You know, I always tell my patients that as we have gotten more minimally invasive, you know, the specifics of the surgery get really honed in, but it requires more and more equipment and everything else. And so to be able to be focused on even that narrow niche of just orthopedics and spine, the amount of technology and equipment and supplies that we have are enormous. So it's hard to be kind of the master of all aspects of things. We have a procedure room where we do pain management cases. We do epidural injections, for example. And then we have six operating rooms, and those operating rooms can satisfy all of those needs. But the back of the house, so to speak, where all of the materials go, all the sterile processing that makes the equipment appropriate for surgery and to sterilize everything, that is as big, sophisticated, and complex as it is in a major hospital, even though we're staying very specialized in just these orthopedic and spine procedures. If we were to expand that to ENT, to general surgery, to obstetrics or gynecology, there's, you know, you just need to have an enormous facility, and that expertise would then become diluted. So we chose for our model from the very beginning to keep that very narrow focus in orthopedics.
Mike, I still have trouble wrapping my head around joint replacement in an outpatient setting. I mean, you mentioned hip and knee. What surgeries wouldn't you do in an outpatient setting then at Lighthouse?
Well, when you get to the point where you can do hip, knee, and shoulder replacements, it isn't because we have the toughest generations of Americans of all time. It's nice to think that, but not necessarily true. But some really important technologies to help advance that. So first of all, being minimally invasive has made a big difference. The minimally invasive approaches that we've talked on your show about before for hip and knees have made it so patients just have less pain and discomfort from surgery. But you have to give a lot of credit here to anesthesia. They've come up with very advanced anesthesia techniques, and especially the use of nerve blocks, using new medications. We use a medication called Exparel, which is simply like, it's like Novocaine you're used to having at the dentist, but it's very sophisticated. It's gradually released over a long period of time. And then they use ultrasound techniques to inject that medication to the nerve surrounding the joint so that they get the sensory nerve. So the patient doesn't experience pain, but they avoid the motor nerves, so they still have normal muscle function. So our patients are kind of amazed 2 hours after surgery when they're walking in the hallways. But it's really that wonders of the anesthesia and the pharmacology that get rid of the pain from the surgery, but leave the legs functional so they can walk and move. And we let our nurses in the recovery room do everything necessary to make that patient wake up safely and feel comfortable and alert and all that. But we also have physical therapy in our recovery room as well, because they're our experts in mobility. I mean, they're the ones that tell the patient, here's how we get you to a sitting position, here's how we get you to a standing position. But we have our hip and knee replacement patients 2-3 hours after surgery going up and down stairs, you know, independently. Their spouse is not helping them, but they're doing that. So better living through pharmacology, they definitely get credit. Anesthesia's role is even bigger than that. You know, I explained to my patients there's three important phases of care for these bigger procedures. And the first phase happens before you ever get to the surgery center. You know, it's the preparation phase. And we have nurse concierge at Lighthouse that get in touch with patients a week or so before surgery. And their goal is to identify the elements of success specifically for each of those patients. You know, what is their home setting like? What are their support systems? Who's going to be there to help them? What type of knowledge and education? They also go through all of the medical records. They go through the patient's consulting notes from their primary care physician, or if they have a cardiologist or a pulmonologist. They get those notes, and then they sit down and we review that, not the day of surgery, but days before surgery with the anesthesia team, looking to flag anything that's critical for patient care. So we get that work done ahead of time. And these are nurses doing this that are experts in the recovery of patients. So they have 20 plus years experience knowing what's critical at the day of surgery. So that expertise rolls beautifully into now they get an opportunity to see that patient, talk to them on telephone days beforehand. And they offer them the opportunity for patients to come by the surgery center a few days ahead of time so they're familiar with the environment. But it's interesting, when we were making the transition, we had patients who had one hip replacement in the hospital and then one in ambulatory, and all of them have told us we would rather do the ambulatory one again. And we have had patients who had their first joint in an ambulatory setting, and they all want to do it that way the second time. There are patients, like if you have a pacemaker or certain medical conditions, the best place for that patient is always going to be in a hospital. But we want to find those patients and separate them. And oftentimes they're disappointed. They're hoping they can have ambulatory surgery, but the safest thing for those individual patients is to stay with the hospital. And so we still do a lot of stuff in the hospital for many patients. But age isn't a criteria. We've had 75-year-old patients come in, have hip replacement, go home in 3 hours. Now, sometimes they're a little tougher than the 55-year-old, which is no surprise to you, I'm sure, in your practice, yeah. Tony.
Mike, how important is it, and I really enjoy that, talking about the pre-op phase, but how important is when they screen them for attitude? I mean, you and I both know. I mean, we're spoiled in treating athletes, right? Because they'll do anything to get back, right? They're not laying around. They got to get back to the gym. They got to get back to it. And some patients need more motivation than others, for lack of a better term. How well do they screen those patients for you so you know what you're getting into?
This is a very interesting story because this goes back several years. But as you know, I'm one of the team physicians for the Hartford Yard Goats and work with the Colorado Rockies. And about 8 years ago, right around the time the Yard Goats came to Hartford, I was back in spring training in Arizona with the Major League team for the Rockies. And we were doing preseason physicals on our Major League players. And it was from them that I learned this screen they were doing called a resiliency score. And we were doing it on our professional baseball players. It's simply 6 questions, and they get scored from like 0 to 5. And a question would be something like, if something bad happens to me, it just rubs right off, or it devastates me. That's an example. So if it rolls right off, you score 5. And we don't test it. We just ask the athlete, you know, you answer it however you want to answer it. And something like, you know, if I get hurt, I'm very worried about my ability to come back, or like if I get hurt, I know I'm going to be okay. And so if you score 30 points, you are a very resilient person. And what was interesting with our baseball players, irregardless of what injury they had a year or two down the road, the predictor of them getting better and coming back to play was very predictable based on how high their score was. So if a baseball player would fill out this little form that took them literally a minute right in front of somebody, right in front of one of our trainers, and they'd fill it out, and they scored a 30, that guy gets hurt, he's reliably coming back. So when I saw that, I said, we're thinking about this outpatient joint thing. I wonder if this would apply to my patients. And these are validated studies. There's published papers on this. So I rolled that little form into my practice. I just started asking my patients the same things. And lo and behold, any one of my patients who's 70 years old and needs a hip replacement, if they scored high on a resiliency score, they just could get through this fairly well. So we don't always do that every day anymore because we kind of learned a lot through that process. But that's what we're looking for. We're looking for resiliency. And resiliency was a better predictor than whether or not somebody had, you know, non-insulin-dependent diabetes, for example, or whether they had pneumonia a year ago or any of those things. It was that kind of attitude. And so we do that. Our concierge nurses do that, and we look for those things in our patients. But it's kind of a funny story because that does predict who will do well.
It's a great story because it quantifies something that I think we experience on a regular basis with our patients. Even I went out with surgery with people who have had a stroke. You can almost predict who's going to recover and how quickly, you know, because they're going to do whatever they have to do. You know, when you tell them to squeeze a ball, you know, 100 times, they're going to do it 200 times.
Exactly.
That's just the way it is. So that resiliency score clearly holds up. How much has to be done before, not just from the nurse concierge, but in preparing? I mean, everybody needs different joints when you're doing joint replacement. How long does it take to get that all ready, right? CT scans. I know you're into angles and measurements and stuff like that. Is that a big factor, or has that become pretty smooth these days?
I think it's smooth. You know, we do a lot of robotic surgery. The majority of our hip and knee replacements are done with robotics. We have two Mako robots at the surgery center, which are, you know, million-dollar machines that assist surgeons with those things. And that requires preoperative CAT scans and things like that. But, you know, the doctor's offices, in coordination with the Lighthouse staff, really has got that down. I think every one of your listeners that's had a procedure done knows that the biggest thing slowing us down are insurance companies. I mean, prior authorizations and the hoopla that goes on is probably one of our biggest difficulties. When we're taking care of patients that have had an injury from an accident, like if they broke their arm in a car crash, I mean, those things don't require prior auth. Those patients can kind of zoom right in. But the rest of it, you know, is just kind of orchestrated by those means. And then each surgeon then kind of manages his flow the same way. And just like we talked about all this important pre-stuff, you know, the third phase of care is the after-surgery phase. And we use an application called FORCE, which is an app-based program that some patients phones. And on that, we correct what are called PROMs, or patient-reported outcomes. So the patients are asked, up to a year after surgery, all elements of the recovery in terms of how they're getting better. And those scores are standardized. So I can compare my outpatients to surgeons that are doing surgeries in Bakersfield, California, for example, or in, you know, Australia or someplace else. And Medicare is going to be mandating for hip and knee replacements that we collect these outcome measures. What we do that's unique at Lighthouse is we put our scores and we put all of our complications and everything right on our website. So when a patient's already shot for their doctor and they know who they want to do their surgery and they're now thinking about their surgery center, if they go to the Lighthouse Surgery Center website, they can look on our website and we'll tell you what our infection rate is, what is our risk of having to go back to the hospital, and how good did our hip and knee replacements patients do. We put those scores right on the website. And very few people do. We're one of just a dozen in the country surgery centers that just get that. But our feeling is that, you know, patients have every right to know the details of what really happened. And, you know, we just put that information right out there for them to have it at their fingertips.
Mike, in 1 minute, what's the next big thing we're going to hear about?
I think that as part of this advancement of better value in healthcare, I think we're looking for national groups to start to really can get all this information together so patients can better shop. You know, they can actually compare A to B to C to D to see where the results are the best. I think that, you know, we're doing that type of stuff. Other strong centers around the country are. And when patients can see that, it's going to really help them make very educated decisions in their own healthcare management about where to go and where to get things done. I would love to see that evolve, and we can see things trending in that direction.
Mike, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for everything you do for our community. I want you to know it's much appreciated.
Well, I enjoy it, and I enjoy working with you for the last 30 years, too. It's fun to be on football games, sidelines together, and catch up on what we're doing with our patients. But you've helped hundreds of my patients get through things, and I've always been very appreciative of that. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Mike. If you wish to reach out to Dr. Michael Joyce, the phone number for his office is 860-652-8883. Many thanks to Kevin Corza. He's been on the board today. As always, Jeff Chandler's in charge of sales and marketing for Healthy Rounds. As always, if you need to reach out to me, you can get me at info@alessimd.com. Next up on WTIC is going to be Law Talk with attorney John Matulis. Until next week, this is Dr. Anthony Alessi. Please stay healthy.
This has been Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by Hartford HealthCare, Rochford Eye Center, St. Francis Hospital, Covaris, and UConn Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Be sure to tune in next Saturday morning at 11 for more Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com. Till then, stay well.